ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You've just received feedback from your manager. You're not nailing your goals. Do you downward spiral, either by blaming yourself, the circumstances, or others? This episode offers you another way through. Hello, welcome to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong. Our guest today is a behavioural design expert who's tackled some of the big problems that modern technology has created. You may remember Nir Eyal from his book Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. It became the go-to manual for Silicon Valley. Nir then wrote Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life as an Antidote to Getting Hooked. Let's find out how he's applying these behavioural design principles to help us make lasting change. Nir Eyal's latest book is called Beyond Belief, The Science-Backed Way to Stop Limiting Yourself and Achieve Extraordinary Results. Nir, welcome back to This Working Life.
Thanks, Lisa. It's great to be back. Thank you.
So it has been a while since we last spoke about your earlier books. I'd love to initially get your thoughts on the levels of digital distraction now.
Well, I wrote Indistractable back in 2019, and I wrote Hooked in 2014. So I was kind of early to spot the problem, but I also think I was kind of early to help fix the problem. So Hooked was about how do you build habit-forming products for good? And we've seen products like Fitbod use the Hook model to get people hooked to exercise, and Duolingo get people hooked to learning a new language. So that's where it's applied for good. Now, of course, it's not the same products that we want to disconnect from. We want an app to help us build a healthy habit, but we also want to disconnect from the unhealthy habits. And I think now it used to be something I had to convince people to do. Now I think it's something that everybody knows is a challenge.
This is a really good point. Why I love speaking to you is that you're a pioneer, so you're just ahead of the curve. So what is the problem that your latest book, Beyond Belief, is trying to solve?
Well, you know, after I wrote Indistractable, I started getting some funny phone calls. You know, I do these office hours where anybody can call me if they have a question about one of my books. Sometimes there's a bit of a wait, but you know, they can all get to me. And I would talk to people and they would say, hey, I read your book. I really liked it. But I just wanted you to know that it didn't work for me. And I'd say, it didn't work for you. Tell me more. You know, why did that happen? You know, I spent 5 years on the book. You know, I really researched back. There are 30 pages of citations to peer-reviewed studies. Tell me more. Let's go step by step. How about step one? How did step one go for you? And they'd say, you know what? I read step one. I definitely read it. I just didn't, do that one. I'd say, okay, I understand. No problem. Let's go to step two. How did step two go for you? Ooh, you know, I read step two as well. I really enjoyed that section of the book, but you see, the thing is that, you know, I didn't do that one either. And so I was so confused. I was like, wait, what happened here? People would wait in line for months to tell the author of a book that they had read that the things that they didn't do didn't work. And so at first I thought, well, is there something wrong with my book? Is it something wrong with my readers? And then I realized, wait a minute, actually I do this too. I have mounds of books that I've read and haven't put into practice. I've talked to gurus and experts. I've listened to the podcasts and the YouTube videos giving me great advice that I haven't put into practice. And so I wanted to know why. And so Beyond Belief became the pre-self-help book. Before you read another self-help book that goes in one ear and out the other, why don't we do the things we know we should do? And we see this every day. We see this with other people. We see this with ourselves. In an age where we have so much information, right? We're drowning in information. We all basically know what to do. And if you don't know what to do, Google it, ask ChatGPT, buy a book about it. The information's out there. What's lacking is an understanding of how do we put it into practice. And so I discovered, I think why, it's that our model of motivation is wrong.
Okay, talk us through your model of motivation, the motivation triangle.
So we tend to think that motivation is a straight line. You know, I took economics in college, I was an econ major, and they taught us that getting people to do things is all about incentives. And that does tend to work, that if you want a certain outcome, whether it's I want money, I want whatever it is, whatever you want, the benefit, you do a certain behavior. And as long as there's incentive, you'll get people to do the behavior as long as they want the benefit, right? But there's something clearly missing, that if it was just as simple enough to just know what to do and why we should do it, well, then we would all have six-pack abs and be multimillionaires. But there's something definitely missing. The thing missing is, of course, belief. That motivation is not a straight line. Motivation is a triangle. That in order to sustain my motivation, I not only need to know the behavior, what needs to happen, what I need to do. I not only need to know the benefit, why I'm doing it, but most importantly, what holds it all together is the belief. So behavior, benefit, and belief. Think about it this way. If you have a boss who you don't believe is going to give you the benefits of your job, you don't believe they're going to give you that promotion, they're not going to give you that raise, are you going to stay committed to them? Are you going to keep working for them very hard? Probably not for very long, right? Conversely, if you don't believe you can do the behavior, maybe you don't think you're a natural leader, maybe you don't think you're very good at sales calls, maybe you don't believe you can be on stage and give a speech. Well, if you don't believe you can do the behavior, even if you know exactly what to do, you're not going to do it.
Does a belief need to be true, Nir?
No. Here's the thing. Okay, so this is what's so fascinating and what really blew my mind is that beliefs are very different from facts. Facts are objective truths. They are true whether or not you believe them. On the other end of the spectrum is faith. Faith is a conviction that does not require evidence. Now, between fact and faith is something very special. And this is what we call a belief. A belief is a conviction that is open to revision based on new evidence. And unlike faith, which almost never changes, and unlike facts, which you cannot change, beliefs are malleable. And so beliefs are tools, not truths. And most of our decisions in life, right? Most of what we decide day to day, should I take this job? Should I buy this product? Should I marry this person? Should I live in this city? All of these day-to-day decisions, they're based on predictions about the future, things that have not happened yet. And to make those decisions, we don't necessarily just use facts, we use beliefs, we use these predictions. And so it's important to realize that beliefs are tools, not truths. That's the most important takeaway, that we can use them to benefit us rather than allowing them to hurt us.
So what's the difference between a limiting versus a liberating belief then?
Yeah. So when it comes to motivation, we have these two types of beliefs. A limiting belief is a belief that saps your motivation and increases suffering. That's what's called a limiting belief. A liberating belief is a belief that increases your motivation and decreases your suffering. And so most of us carry around these limiting beliefs. It's almost like your face. You know, your face, if I said, look at your face, you can't look at your face. Right? Not the way you can look at your hands or your feet. And yet we're all carrying around a face, and yet it's hidden to us. In order to see our face, we have to reflect. We have to have a mirror. We have to look at ourselves through some kind of outside tool. And the same happens for our limiting beliefs. We cannot see our own limiting beliefs, just like we can't see our own face without some kind of tool. Now, interestingly enough, we can see everybody else's limitations, right? You can see your colleagues' limitations, your boss's limitations, your kids' limitations, your spouse. You can see all their limiting beliefs. You can't see your own. So what's interesting also about these limiting beliefs is that they always sound wise. They sound like we're being smart. They sound like we're, you know, being realistic. But in fact, these limiting beliefs are not facts. They are just beliefs. So when we say things to ourselves, especially in the career and life domain, when it comes to, you know, be realistic, don't get ahead of yourself, stay in your lane, don't be a tall poppy, you know, all these things that people tell themselves, I'm not a real leader. I'm not good on stage. I can't make sales calls. I'm no good with money. I mean, this goes on and on and on. We all hear this little voice in our head telling us about our limitations. And it's worth pausing before we begin to change those limiting beliefs. It's worth asking ourselves, well, why do we even have limiting beliefs? Why would our brains come hardwired with something that decreases our motivation and increases our suffering? Well, turns out that evolution didn't design your brain to make you happy. Your brain doesn't care if you're flourishing. Your brain doesn't care if you're fulfilled. Your brain doesn't care if you're meeting your full potential. Your brain doesn't care if you're making as much money as you could and having the best life you can. No, your brain's primary job is to keep you alive. Unfortunately, that doesn't lead us to breakthroughs. That doesn't lead us to the kind of life we are capable of living because our brain is constantly telling us, you know, it's pulling us to passivity. It's constantly telling us, you can't, you shouldn't try, you're not ready.
Let's go through the steps.
Sure. Yeah. So step number one is being conscious of the fact that this is in all of us. We're all running these scripts of previous limiting beliefs that kept us safe at one point, but may no longer be serving us. The next thing we have to do is to ask ourselves, okay, well, knowing that is our default, where are we stuck? Okay, where in our life is there something that you keep repeating to yourself that is not getting you to where you want to go? I don't have enough time. It's too late. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I'm not qualified. I'm no good at this, et cetera, et cetera. Then once we can identify that goal that we're not achieving, right? Whether it's, I've been meaning to go to the gym, but I'm not. I know I deserve that promotion, but I haven't got out for it. I haven't, you know, made a presentation, whatever it might be that you're not doing, whatever that excuse is. Okay, you sit down, you sit down. What is that excuse? What's that thing that's holding me back? And then what we want to do is a process called inquiry-based stress reduction. It sounds fancy. Aristotle used to do something very similar. And what we're going to do is to construct a liberating narrative. We're going to ask ourselves, could the exact opposite be true? I'm giving you the very condensed version. And then what we're doing is collecting what's called a portfolio of perspectives. So just like how you have a stock portfolio or Pokemon cards or baseball cards, when we have our one belief that's limiting us, we don't want to necessarily change our minds. Because you see, the brain hates changing its mind. You hear people say, I am what I am. No worse words have ever been spoken. Right? Whatever comes after I am, that's the most dangerous word in the English language. Because I am defines you as fixed. You can't change whatever comes after I am. So we have to be very, very careful with these labels. And so what this technique asks us to do is not to change who we are, not to change what we believe, but just to collect numerous options, other potential perspectives. And then the last step is to try on those beliefs for size. Okay, they don't have to be true. They don't have to be true. They just have to be useful. And so just like how you would walk into a shoe store if you need a new pair of shoes, you don't say, oh, give me that pair. First, you try them on. Right? You see if it's the right fit, the right size. And so we can try on these beliefs. We can live our life as if they are true, because we don't know for sure. Right? Beliefs are tools, not truths. And then we can see whether they serve us or they hurt us. And if they don't work, we can change that belief and try a different one.
You're listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. I'm Lisa Leong. My guest is Nir Eyal, behavioral design expert. He's the author of Beyond Belief. So there was a case study in your book about a manager receiving some negative feedback on a presentation. Then she goes into a downward spiral. So this belief that is constructed in that moment, it just keeps on coming back. So she's ruminating on it. What's going on in her brain, and what could she have done differently rather than continuing this downward spiral to the extent that basically she just stopped doing presentations and then obviously got some bad feedback after that?
Right, right. So this is what happened to Maria. So Maria was asked to give a presentation and she didn't do so great, at least not in her perspective. She didn't do as well as she thought she could have. And what happened is what most of us do, we slip into what's called a negativity bias, that we tend to see where we mess up versus where we do well. And so she began to ruminate on, oh, I should have said this and I should have done that. And her conclusion after all this rumination was that, well, I'm just not good presenting. That's not my thing. That's not who I am. And this leads to what's called identity foreclosure. Whenever you believe I am what I am, right? I'm no good at math. I'm not a numbers person. I'm no good at presenting. I'm no good at sales. I'm not a good, you know, whenever you say I'm not a natural whatever, boom, that's it. You're right. Because you have foreclosed on your identity. There's no more room left to ask yourself, wait a minute, is it who I am? Was I born this way? Or is it something that's malleable? Is it something that I could learn to get better at? So once she started taking a different perspective, okay, as opposed to I'm not good at public speaking versus I am good at public speaking if I prepare, if I make sure I'm talking about something that I'm passionate about, et cetera. She made some caveats on when she actually was good at public speaking in the past, that she actually did do a pretty good job. And then she started keeping a change log, meaning what she was doing, you know, when we don't record what's actually happening in actual reality, our brain makes up a simulation in our minds. We only focus on the negative stuff. And so that's what we repeat again and again and again until it becomes true. So when Maria kept telling herself, I'm no good at public speaking, she shrank from the opportunities. She did them less and less. She got less practice at that skill. And then guess what? It became true because she kept telling herself it was true. So it functionally became true. She shrank away from the very practice that would make her better.
What's the difference between this and magical thinking?
Yeah. So I am very much a skeptic by choice. And all of my work is backed by peer-reviewed studies. So not just, this worked for me, it's going to work for you, or this worked for some famous person, then you should do it too. No. I want to see the studies. And so, you know, we know that magical thinking, that positive thinking, that manifesting, that vision boarding actually has some real negative consequences. Not only does it not work, it actually backfires. The work of Gabriella Ottigen she's a researcher who connected people to blood pressure monitors as they were doing these manifesting exercises, as they were, you know, envisioning an outcome they wanted. They had this magical thinking, this positive thinking of, you know, here's what I want. Here's the end goal. I'm sitting here and I'm envisioning that mansion. I'm manifesting abundance. I'm envisioning my six-pack abs, and I'm going to have a wonderful family, and everything's going to be perfect. And what she found was that when people did that, when they did these manifesting visioning exercises about their end goals, they became more relaxed. She could actually see it in their blood pressure monitor, that they became more relaxed. They became less likely to act on what they wanted to do, and they became less likely to actually get what they dreamed of. So for example, students who manifested getting a top score on their exam studied less and got worse grades because of these visioning exercises than students who didn't do the manifesting exercise. So manifesting and visioning can actually backfire. But people are probably listening and saying, yeah, but you know, don't some people do this successfully? Doesn't this work for some people? Well, it's important to understand how people vision correctly. That if you think about athletes, for example, athletes definitely do visioning exercises. And in fact, this is how the self-help industry took something that was true and made it false. Because just visioning the outcomes doesn't work. An athlete doesn't envision, you know, the gold medal or the trophy. That's not what an athlete visualizes. It's not the outcome. What an athlete visualizes is what they will do when an obstacle gets in their way. This is called mental contrasting. So the important thing to do is not, oh, I can't wait to get the thing at the end, because what's going to happen when you invariably hit one of those bumps in the road, that some kind of difficulty, some kind of challenge, that's what you need to prepare for. You need to prepare for the pain. So an athlete prepares for, okay, I'm on offense and defense is coming at me. What am I going to do? I'm skiing down the mountain and I might lose my balance. What am I going to do? So what we can do in the working world is, okay, I'm preparing for this difficult task. I'm going to give this presentation. When I forget my lines, not if, but when I forget what I'm going to say, what am I going to do? Okay, how will I prepare physically as well as psychologically for the discomfort? Because what most people do when they do one of these visioning exercises, when they just make positive thoughts and vibrations into the universe, and then it doesn't deliver, and then there is some kind of difficulty, they quit. And they think, oh, there must be something wrong with me. I didn't vibrate hard enough or whatever. I didn't manifest enough. And then they give up and they quit. Whereas people who prepare for the pain, when that discomfort comes, they're not surprised. They know what to do with it, and they can overcome it and eventually achieve their goals.
You actually say that it's about understanding that we do need to push through a bit of this uncomfortable feeling to get right to the, you know, to keep on going.
This is the master unlock. If you want to unlock your career, your relationships, your health, this is the master unlock. I'm about to tell you the real secret. That people who are successful at the top of their game in every field, whether it's sports, whether it's business, whether it's the arts, in every field, when you talk to those people, and I've interviewed billionaires, and this is what I find, they have the same pains we all have. Okay, we all have the same pain in our life. But the most successful people don't see the pain as suffering. This is the unlock. That if you can see the information that's coming into your brain that might at times be painful, if you can see it not necessarily as suffering. Okay, so when you go on stage, I'll tell you personally, you know, when I started my speaking career, and that's how I make my living, what you don't want is stage fright. And that's exactly what I felt. And I would get the sweaty armpits and I would get the cotton mouth and I would get the heart palpitations in my chest. And I would tell myself, you see, I'm no good at public speaking. I should really do something else. I can't do this professionally. And I would cancel speaking engagements because I thought I wasn't ready, too big of an audience. I can't go on stage. And now I changed how I see the pain. So Lisa, I'll be honest with you right now. I have the same exact symptoms, the same exact stage fright. I have the heart palpitations. I have the sweaty armpits, the same exact feelings, but my beliefs are completely different. So as opposed to this anxiety spiral that I used to tell myself that, you know, if I was a real pro, I wouldn't feel this. And what if I mess up on stage and I'm no good at this? Instead, my new belief is, you see, my heart rate is beating fast. So I can get more blood to my brain so my brain can have more oxygen to deliver my best possible presentation to help people change their lives. Now, is that a fact? I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't care. Beliefs are tools, not truths. When I believe that that physiological state of the fast heartbeat, that means that this is something I really care about. And the fact that I have a fast heartbeat means good. I'm going to do better at this because of it. Again, I made up a belief. I don't care whether it's true or not. It's a tool that serves me because beliefs are tools, not truths.
So Nir, each week we ask our expert guest to give This Working Life as something that they can try each week. It's like a bit of an experiment. We want to make their work life better. They'll try it and then they report back. So Nir Iyer, what would you like us to try this week?
Okay, step number one, what is the career or work-related limiting belief that shows up most often for you, no matter what that is? What is that limiting belief? I'm no good at sales. I'm not a leader. I don't like public speaking. I'm no good at storytelling, whatever it might be. And then what I want you to do is to construct its liberating alternative. Ask yourself, what would I do today if I believed something else instead? Don't constrict yourself to thinking it has to be true, okay? It needs to be based on evidence. But what is a liberating alternative that might serve you better? And then what I want you to do, step three, is to take one small action based on that new liberating belief. So send one email for that stretch role, speak for 30 seconds at today's meeting, whatever it might be, take one small action. And then step number four, I want you to document what happened, not how what you perceived happened, not your negativity, but what actually happened. Did the outcome match what your limiting belief predicted? Or did you unlock something by adopting that new liberating belief?
All right. So we want you to try the three steps and then report back. You can jump back into LinkedIn. We will be engaging in this experiment together. Nir Iyer, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Nir Iyer is a behavioral design expert, former Stanford lecturer, and the author of Beyond Belief, the science-backed way to stop limiting yourself and achieve extraordinary results. Our episode about working past retirement age, inspired by Sir David Attenborough's 100th birthday, led some of you to send us voice memos about your thoughts and plans for the future. In case you missed it, we spoke with Senior Australian of the Year, Professor Henry Bedati, who's 78, founder of OzHarvest, Ronnie Khan, who's either 73 or 74, she can't quite remember, and she's stopped counting, and Brian James, who started a business in his early 70s polishing copper and now employs other retirees to help. They all told us they're working full-time and have no plans to stop anytime soon. Now let's hear from Real.
I just cannot imagine retiring. I'm 56 years old and I feel like I'm just getting started. My career road has been seriously wiggly, including 12 incredible years as CEO of a not-for-profit, but all my jobs have led me to starting my own business. So I've exited the safety of full-time employment to develop a pilot. I'm crazy passionate about one big idea, and I'm going to work on this for the rest of my life. I have to bring this idea to life because it's my absolute calling. And I believe it will help make the world a better place.
You can catch up on the episode on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. Just look for Sir David Attenborough in the title. Thanks for listening to This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Nar, Melbourne. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can like or subscribe to our show on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. And please share the love as well. Send it to a friend or a colleague you think would enjoy This Working Life as much as you. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.